Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We have some weird stuff for you tonight. We really do. We have some good stuff coming up next hour, but this first hour is like weird stuff. Let me skip ahead. Joining us next hour will be Charlotte Dennett. She's a Democrat running for Attorney General in Vermont. And she has pledged that if elected, she will follow the plan in Vince Bugliosi's book and she will prosecute George W. Bush for murder. And then half an hour later, at 10:30 Eastern, Vince Bugliosi himself will join us again and discuss the coming elections and the chances that Bush will actually be prosecuted for murder. Now, if you want to check this candidate out, go to CharlotteDennettForAttorneyGeneral.com. It's a long one. Charlotte Dennett. Her last name is D-E-N-N-E-T-T. And you know how to spell Charlotte, don't you, Truth Seeker? Okay, Charlotte Dennett, D-E-N-N-E-T-T, forAttorneyGeneral.com. Take a look at her website. I don't know where to begin. First of all, I watched the 30-minute ad, infomercial, political ad, whatever you want to call it, put together by Barack Obama's team, and I was very impressed. Not only with the message, but with the quality, theatrical quality, the artistic quality. The production values of this 30-minute long video, actually it was 27 minutes, because the last 3 minutes they flipped live to, where was it, Miami? Where was he, Miami? Someplace in Florida. Huge indoor arena, packed with people. The last 2.5 or 3 minutes was live. But I was also impressed with his persona. His message is his message. And I've said before, early in this campaign season, that as a liberal, I certainly do not see Barack Obama as a fellow traveler. Can I use that, or is somebody going to accuse me of being a communist? Well, you people don't care if I'm a communist or not. Barack Obama is not a liberal, but that may be okay right now. I mean, I've certainly made the decision, and I've made it wholeheartedly to totally, completely, 100% support this man's presidency or bid for the presidency. And I think the reason is, we all know his position on the issues. If you don't know his position on the issues, it's because you haven't gone to his website or you haven't listened to his speeches. Now, whether or not he follows through to the best that he can as the executive remains to be seen. I realize we're in a political season. Of course things are going to be said. But let me tell you what it is, if you don't mind. Indulge me for just a moment here. What it is that makes me connect to Barack Obama. And it's pure emotion. Pure emotion. I'm not ashamed to admit that. I've already examined to the best I can, to the best of my ability, intellectually, his positions on issues. To the best of my ability, his logic as to why he adopts the positions on the issues that he has adopted. And I've come to the conclusion that he is very much a centrist Democrat who has some policies that I utterly disagree with, his war policies, his insistence on continuing 2 illegal wars. I'm hoping against hope that this will be this is a rhetorical device that he has to use to get elected. Does that mean I cut him some slack on being a liar? No, it means I cut him some slack on being a politician and realizing where he is politicking. He's politicking in the United States of America. So having said all that, I have no illusions about Barack Obama that I'm aware of. But the connection comes on an emotional level, purely and simply. Now, that's not bad, or it's not improper. I connect with... I connect with a lot of things on an emotional level, a lot of things. I connect to people. If I don't connect to someone on an emotional level, then there is no connection, period. I can't have, as a friend or someone I spend a lot of time with, someone that I only connect with intellectually or logically or politically or yada, 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 on some philosophical basis. There has to be an emotional connection for me. But in watching this 30-minute-long infomercial tonight about Barack Obama, it finally settled into me that this guy connects with me and I with him emotionally. I've never met him. There's only one degree of separation between us because we have a very good friend who ran against him in for the Senate from Illinois back when he was not even in the U.S. Senate yet. So there's only one degree of separation, and I got some insight from Nancy, who ran against him, Nancy Skinner, back during that campaign, seems like a million years ago, some insight into him, into his character, into who he was before he announced he was running for president. But that's, you know, that really, I guess, doesn't matter a whole lot. What matters to me is the connection that Barack Obama, and I mentioned this the other night about Michelle Obama, the connection, the emotional connection that I feel when I listen to these people. When I watched him tonight, even though I understand the theatricalness of how that 30-minute presentation was put out there for the American public, even though it's very easy for me and you probably to see the production values. I've worked in media enough to really appreciate good production values, and whoever put that together, and I've heard the names, I just can't call them up right now, they did an excellent job, an excellent job. The intercuts, and my friend Bob Alexander, who runs SuperBeans.com, used to work in the film industry in Hollywood, and I haven't gotten an email from him about this yet, but I will guarantee you that Bob will email me and say, that was really well done, regardless of what the message is. So in watching this tonight, and I realized what this guy inspires in the people that support him, and I think he would inspire it in anyone who would just shut up and listen for a while and get McCain and Palin and this right-wing garbage out of their ears and this neo-Nazism, this fascism that the Republican Party has become. If people could just clear their ears, I'm not saying he walks on water, he's a messiah, or anything of the sort, but he would connect with you. The guy would connect with you. Now, to a lot of people listening to this program, that's emotional claptrap. Oh, Malloy, come on, quit. Oh, my God, quit. You quit. You know, to me, that's important. If it's not important to you, so be it. I mean, yeah, that's fine, you know. But to find, this is what I think, this was the charm that Reagan had. And, of course, look what Reagan turned out to be. But, you know, this guy, Barack Obama, is not an old man. He's not in the early stages of Alzheimer's, as Reagan was. But Reagan, I think the connection that he made to so many people was because he, being a well-trained actor, he was able to reach across that fourth wall and grab your heart and squeeze it, if you were so inclined to be squoze. Barack Obama is not a trained actor. He comes at you, I think, he comes at me from the heart. I don't agree with a lot of his policies. So what? He agrees with them. He thinks they're good policies. And I got the sense of his honesty. While I disagree vehemently with him on certain issues, most of which are focused on the Middle East and his refusal to call for single-payer health care, you know, I agree with him viscerally on those issues. But aside from that, I mean, I can disagree with someone and connect emotionally and think, well, damn, you try to educate me, pal, and I'll try to educate you, and let's see where we go. And that's the connection that I get with Barack Obama. He doesn't know me from Adam's house cat, and never will. And I'll probably never have a chance to meet him. Certainly never have a chance to sit down and say, listen, Barack, this is what I think you ought to do. So, you know, let's just kind of let that fade away. But Barack Obama has the ability, and I think this is why people are just drawn to him. Because you get the sense that he's honest, that he's a decent human being. How long has it been since there's been a decent human being that you didn't think was tricking you in political office? It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope every time.
time I turn on the TV,
there's hope.
Somebody's acting crazy,
there's hope.
You said it, it'll...
Left out by right-wing talk radio, you found a home with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I identified our guest coming up at 10 Eastern, Charlotte Bennett, for Attorney General as a Democrat. She is not. She is running on the Progressive Party ticket in Vermont. My bad. Not a Democrat. Progressive Party. Progressive Party. Progressive Party. Write it on the chalkboard 500 times, Malloy. Progressive Party. Anyway, that was my little riff on Barack Obama. If you on the West Coast, I understand that they're going to show it at 8 p.m. Pacific time tonight. You'll get a chance to see it. Later on this evening, when we get into the phone call section of the program, if we ever get there tonight, which I hope we will, if you want to comment on what Barack Obama had to say, feel free to do that. Again, I am not the least bit hesitant to talk about the emotional connection that is necessary for me to identify with anybody or anything. If there's not an emotional connection, I'm just not, you know, I'm not that way. I'm not an automaton, or I don't live in my head. I've said it before. This program is a classic example. If you're a regular listener, you know where I dwell most of the time, you know, in raw emotion. So anyway, I liked what he had to say. I'm going to vote for him. I will do whatever that I can do, that I'm asked to do, or what I think I can do to see that he's elected president. And then we'll see what happens, right? Joe the plumber is now giving advice on U.S. relations with Israel, not U.S. relations, but giving advice on Israel. And is stating now that Barack Obama's election would murder Israel, would end the state of Israel. Who is this asswipe? Who is this freak? This Joe the plumber. He's not a plumber. All of a sudden, he's turning up at Palin rallies. He gives press conferences. He's hired a publicist. And now he's giving foreign policy statements. Where did this jackass come from? Have you listened to what he has to say? My four-year-old daughter has a tighter grip on reality than this guy. I mean, the clowns and idiots and jokers that this campaign has produced. I mean, from Joe the plumber all the way up to the hoe being pimped by the old man, the old pimp. I mean, my God, where do these people come from? Is this what the Republicans puke up onto the national political stage? Yes. This is what they offer. Stupid heads, shills, idiots, nuts, basket cases, marquees where half the light bulbs are burned out. Oh, my God. Joe the plumber and Sarah Palin. And what's this? I heard on Oberman's program tonight. He and his lawyers and publicists and handlers are now trying to get him a country music contract, a recording contract. Jesus God. Oh yeah, and he's thinking about running for political office from Ohio. You know, his 15 minutes has stretched to about 45 minutes now, and this will be the last time I bring him up, unless somebody beats his ass somewhere, and then we'll have to report it as news. Socialism, Marxism. Blah, 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 blah. That's Barack Obama's plan, right? The claims that a 39% tax rate is outrageously high are laughable. Isn't that what they're talking about? It's Marxism. It's socialism. It's communism. Was Reagan a Marxist? His top tax rate was 50%. How about Nixon? The top marginal tax rate under Nixon was 70%. So far, those are both Republicans, by the way. Eisenhower, was he a Marxist? The highest income bracket's tax rate under Eisenhower was 91%. 91%! That's almost confiscatory. And when JFK got elected, the first thing he did was lower it. But were these Marxists? Reagan, Nixon, Eisenhower, were they Marxists, communists? Dwight Eisenhower, 91% was the top marginal tax rate. For the really, 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 really wealthy. Now, that's how they paid for example, the national highway system, National Defense Highway System. You know, the interstates that the current generation of Republicans has been leaving to crumble and rot. You know, costs money, for Christ's sake. Now, should the top tax rate be 91%? Well, I'll have to think about that. But the idea that this economy would be crippled by a tax rate of 39% on incomes greater than $250,000, that's Barack Obama's plan, or that this is Marxism, or that this is a Democratic Party level of taxation, anyone with a sense of a history of the 20th century should find this a very sad joke. I mean, really. Now, I got this information, a website I want you to go to. This is a really good website. It is truthandpolitics.org. Truthandpolitics.org. Go check it out, okay? We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
The Hindenburg was a giant Zeppelin. Its makers made a minor oversight. Before they filled it up with explosive gas, they should have fixed the nose smoking light.
Justice and the American way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Check out truthandpolitics.org. They say it is... Here's what they say. To engage in informed political discourse, people need access to information. However, educating oneself about the issues can be labor-intensive, with time spent locating resources rather than learning from them. It may take an hour or more to sharpen a letter to the editor of a newspaper by citing facts and figures to buttress a claim. ThinkPolitics.org is a clearinghouse for knowledge, an attempt to achieve economies of scale in the dissemination and organization of information. Yada, 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 yada. So go read their policy statement, but check them out, truthandpolitics.org. I forget who sent that to me today, but it is it's a good site. Good site. What else here? Oh, yeah, don't forget Charlotte Dennett coming up at top of the hour. Progressive Party candidate for Attorney General in Vermont, and swears that, she says that when she is elected, if she's elected, she will pursue murder charges against Bush, which is what writer Vince Bugliosi has been talking about, and that's what his new book is about. She will join us at the top of the hour, bottom of the hour. We'll have Vince back on again. There was a meeting in Minneapolis. Apparently, the past couple of days, I don't know, when was this? But they had the Three Stooges on stage, Michael Medved, Hugh Hewitt, and Dennis Prager, all of whom Kathy and I have met at when we used to go to these phony Talkers Magazine so-called conventions in around the country, usually in New York. Those conventions are designed to put money in Michael Harrison's pocket so he can support right-wing talk show hosts to go to Israel for trips to Israel. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable what you find when you start turning up rocks But Michael Medved, Hugh Hewitt, and Dennis Prager, the three losers, the three stooges, whatever you want to call them, hideous, hideous people, spoke before a crowd at a Minneapolis Orchestra Hall in an event the other day attended by Republican candidates Michelle Bachmann, Norm Coleman, soon to be former senator, and someone named Eric Paulson, who I don't know who he is because I don't live there, as well as Governor Tim Pawlenty. Medved, when it was his turn to stand up there and moon the audience, Medved called Al Franken, who is going to take Norm Coleman's seat away from him. Medved called Al Franken an emotionally disturbed liar, a low-life leftist, a disgrace to the state of Minnesota, and, quote, the most despicable and disgraceful candidate ever nominated by a major party for the United States Senate anywhere, end quote. He then went on to compare Al Franken to neo-Nazi David Duke, remember him, from Louisiana, and called Al Franken, quote, trash on the ballot, end quote. Jesus Christ, Medved. You know, I met this guy. Remember that time we went to New York, Kathy, and there was one of Michael Harrison's dumbass panels, and I was on the panel with Medved sitting right next to him, and I almost picked up the microphone and laid it upside his head. Do you remember that? Remember that? Somebody had to grab me? Because I was about to beat his little curly-haired, mustached ass right into the floor. It came that close. I forget what he said. I forget what he said. But I almost whipped his ass. Now, you right-wingers out there who listen to this program, send him an email and ask him, and he'll say, oh, I don't remember that. Okay. But we came that close. I shouldn't say we, because he sat there and cowered. When he saw I was about to pound on him, he just kind of, you know how somebody hunches over. I was sitting to his left. There were about six of us on that panel, seven of us. And Medved was just a little scum sucker, just a little jerk. And I forget what was said. This was how long, man, this is 6 years ago, isn't it? It's before Molly was born. But all I could think of when I was sitting next to him was assault and battery, assault and battery, assault and battery. Don't do it, assault and battery. But very close to Mike Malloy punching his ass out. Very close. Assault and battery, lawsuit, lawsuit, assault and battery, assault and battery. So he is calling Franken emotionally disturbed, a liar, a low-life leftist. Al Franken is as much of a leftist as Barack Obama is, or Bill Clinton. Al Franken, whom I used to work with at Air America, and who, you know, I've had some personal disagreements with Al Franken when we were on the same network together. He's no more of a leftist than, I don't know, than I'm a rightist. And, you know, there's some personal animosity, probably on my part. Al Franken's one of those people who just, you know, he doesn't know other people exist unless he chooses to let them into his orbit, which is cool. That's fine. And the only reason, you know, I have any claim to knowing him at all was because we worked for the same network and when we made our trips to New York and yada, yada, yada. But it was so funny that year, the year I got fired from Air America was also the year I won the AIR award, the best radio talk show in New York. And I think I was up against Al Franken, Randy Rhodes, Sean Hannity, this scum sucking Malzberg. I think there were, yeah, five of us. And of course I won it. And, Randy called me from the dinner. I don't know. We were going someplace, Kathy and I, and Randy called me and she said, we only won one award, the whole network, and it was you. And I just about drove off the road. I thought it was great. I really did. So, you know, and that made Al Franken even a little more distant where it concerned me. All right. All that personal garbage aside, he is not a leftist. He is not a neo-Nazi. He's Jewish. He is not a neo-Nazi. He is, he's not despicable. He's not disgraceful. He's not a disgrace to the state of Minnesota. That's his home state. But coming out of the mouth of Michael Medved, you know, I would assume that Al Franken, and Al Franken he's got a little street cred himself. I wouldn't be surprised if Al Franken would wait for the right moment and grab Michael Medved by his mustache and take him down a peg or two. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see that. But anyway, it was sponsored by some Nazi radio station in Minneapolis, WWTC, what is it, AM 1280, called The Patriot. If you look at the video, the YouTube thing, where the scum-sucking Medved and Prager, Dennis Prager, and the other stooge, Hugh Hewitt, where they are doing what Republicans do. Now, they're at a rally for Michelle Bachmann. Prager calls Michelle Bachmann, quote, a wonderful, wonderful, extraordinary human being. Jesus God! Prager added at that speech, Prager apparently hates America. He's no friend of the Enlightenment. But he said, quote, equality, which is the primary value of the left, is a European value, not an American value, end quote. Let's see. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, etc., etc. What's that from, Prager, you half-witted jackass? Equality is not an American value. And it's in one of the founding documents of this republic. Now, you see, this is the problem. You have complete jackasses like Hannity and Limbaugh, and then you have someone like Dennis Prager. Well, I love classical music. That's something that Michael Medved and I share. And, you know, I live in California, and we have great symphonies out there. And blah, 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 blah. But he says equality is not an American value. It's European. Oh, well, then that makes it bad, right? It's European, right, Dennis? Oh, Jesus God! So's pizza! And fish and chip! Well, no, that's British. These people are disgusting. They really are. Now, what is Sarah Palin doing? Have you heard the latest? Have you got that piece of, you got that sound? Put it up. It runs for, 2 minutes? We got time to do it? Two minutes? Okay, we can stretch a little bit. This is Wolf Blitzer from today, I guess. Listen to Wolf Blitzer. We'll have it in a second for you. Wolf Blitzer from the situation.
Sarah Palin now speaking out openly about her intentions in 2012 if she and John McCain were to lose this contest next Tuesday. In an interview with ABC News, Sarah Palin is now saying she would be interested in remaining a serious national political figure going ahead to 2012. She was asked what happens in 2012 if you lose on Tuesday. Would you simply go back to Alaska? Elizabeth Vargas of ABC News asked her, and Palin said this, and I'll read it to you verbatim according to an ABC transcript. Absolutely not, Sarah Palin says. I think that if I were to give up and wave a white flag of surrender against some of the political shots that we've taken, that would bring this whole, and I'm not doing this for naught. That's a direct quote from Sarah Palin, clearly leaving open the possibility that she would be interested in leading the Republican Party in 2012 if she and John McCain were to lose this presidential contest right now. Let's go to Dana Bash. She's covering the McCain campaign for us. You're in Ohio, a key battleground state. Any reaction yet, Dana, to this rather blunt statement from Sarah Palin that she would, in fact, be interested in leading the Republican Party going forward after Tuesday if they lose?
I just got off the phone, Wolf, with a senior McCain advisor, and I read this person the quote, and I think it's fair to say that this person was speechless. There was a long pause, and I just heard a huh on the other end of the phone. I mean, this is certainly not a surprise to anybody who has watched Sarah Palin that she is interested in potentially a future national run. Certainly she has been being urged to by a lot of people inside the Republican Party if they do lose, but it is an if, and people inside the McCain campaign, they do not want any discussion that has an if in front of it 6 days before the election. They don't want any discussion at all, any kind of hypothetical talk about running for the next time around. ground. So certainly this is not, at least initially, being received well inside the McCain campaign.
I'm not surprised at all. It's one of those, wow, she's openly talking about 2012 if they lose. That's not okay. Supposed to be something that you say. You're supposed to say, well, I'm not looking ahead. I'm looking only ahead to Tuesday. Those are the talking points.
Okay, all right. Well, she's supposed to be on talking points, but this woman is ordained by Jesus, her twisted Jesus, and some perverted God to bring about the end of the world. And in order to bring about the end of the world, she's got to have some real power. And, you know, being vice president would give her no real power except for writing laws in the Senate. So if she gets to be president by leading the ticket in 2012, you see, then she can end the world. Oh, my God. What a campaign season. Eh?
In your place, you know, if silence was golden, you couldn't raise a dime. Because your mind is on vacation and your mouth is working overtime. You quoting figures and dropping names. You're telling stories about the days. You're over laughing when things ain't funny. You're trying to sound like the big money, you know it's talk.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 8 minutes before the hour. Don't forget, coming back after the break at the top, we'll be joined by Charlotte Dennett, running on the Progressive Party ticket for Attorney General of the state of Vermont. Check out our website, Charlotte Dennett, D-E-N-N-E-T-T, CharlotteDennett for AttorneyGeneral.com. We're going to talk with her for a while, and then Vince Pugliosi again at the bottom of the hour. Have we got time for this Elizabeth Dole ad? Elizabeth Dole is another Republican who's going to have to draw unemployment checks for a while. She's uncorked one hell of a charge. She's saying that the Democrat running against her is godless. It's a 30-second ad running on television in North Carolina. It's unbelievable. I want you to hear this. The end of the ad features a picture of the woman running against her. The woman running against her is Democrat Kay Hagan. And there's a female voice off screen yelling, "There is no God." The clear implication is that the voice is Hagan's. Now, the fact is, the Democratic candidate is a Sunday school teacher and an elder at her Presbyterian church. But this is how desperate these filthy vermin, especially Liddy Dole, who I don't know, maybe the Viagra that her husband's been using for 10 years now doesn't work anymore. I don't know. Here's the 30-second spot. Listen to this.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approved this message.
A leader of the Godless Americans PAC recently held a secret fundraiser in Kay Hagan's honor.
There is no God to rely on. There was no Jesus.
We'll take an under God out of the Pledge of Allegiance. You're down with that.
We're down with that.
In God we trust. You're going to whip that off the money?
Yeah, we would.
Godless Americans and Kay Hagan. She hid from cameras, took godless money. What did Hagan promise in return?
There is no God.
Now, if Kay Hagan were an atheist, Kay Hagan would probably hunt down Liddy Dole and challenge her to a debate on religious superstition versus humanistic logic. But Kay Hagan is not a godless atheist like, for example, I am. She is an elder at the Presbyterian Church and a Sunday school teacher. Now, Elizabeth Dole knows this. So I guess you can use logic, if this is what it is, illogic, something. By extension, Elizabeth Dole is a goddamn liar. Elizabeth Dole is a freak to begin with. What has Elizabeth Dole done in her 6 years? She got the Jesse Helms I Hate Negroes and Queers seat in from North Carolina. What has Elizabeth Dole done for the past 6 years? Anybody listening in North Carolina, what legislation has she sponsored? What has she done? Hello, anybody out there? But by God, when it comes time to get reelected so she can continue sucking at the public trough, what did you think I was going to say? She will label her Presbyterian Sunday school teacher Democrat opponent as a godless atheist. No, Elizabeth, I am a godless atheist. Kay Hagan is a Sunday school teacher for the Presbyterian Church and an elder. You, Elizabeth, are a goddamn freak. I will be so glad when these people are just shoveled out the back door of the U.S. Senate. Just shovel them out the back door, kick them to the curb, and let these miserable bastards just lay there. Oh, my God, I hate these people. Have I mentioned that yet tonight, how much I hate them? Elizabeth Dole. What did you say one time, Kathy? Her back is full of ballpoint pen marks.
Ballpoint pen marks. I think she's suffering from ink poisoning.
Ink poisoning.
I think that's... What is godless money? What is prayerful money or God filled?
Well,
money?
All of it. Jesus drove the money temples out of the money changers out of the temple. Jesus said, "From each to his need, from each whatever he said." But you know, Jesus
he was
said,
a Marxist.
He was a Marxist. Jesus was a Marxist before Marx. You know, 2,000 years before Marx was born, he didn't believe in money. Jesus, you know, he just traveled around with 11 or 12 guys, three or four of whom were probably gay, all around the Middle East, trying to explain to people, look, there's an easier way, folks. You don't have to murder and eat each other. All you have to do is just love each other.
But the reference in that ad to the woman who took the godless money, I want to know, is Elizabeth Dole's money just full of God?
Yeah,
or?
Right. Well, Elizabeth Dole's money is God money, and her opponent has godless money. You know how that works. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It is almost 7 past the hour. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Now, if you were good talk radio program listeners, you did go to Charlotte Denning's website, or Charlotte Dennett's website at some point during the last hour, charlottedennettforattorneygeneral.com. If you did not, you're in your car, you're listening someplace where you're not by your computer, let me just quote a couple of things about this candidate. First of all, she is running on the Progressive Party ticket. She's an author and attorney. She and her husband, Gerald, have lived in Vermont since 1984. She's been practicing law since 97. Throughout her career, it says here, she's been tough on powerful corporations and irresponsible government entities. Yay! She helped sue one of the worst polluters in the country, DuPont Company. She spent over a decade documenting the role of big oil in destroying the Amazon rainforest and the people who live there. It just goes on and on. In Vermont, she sued the Office of Child Support after it failed to turn over support payments to her client for years. You can go to her website and read this yourself. Charlotte, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you have me on.
My pleasure. It is nice to talk to someone who is running for something, anything on the Progressive Party ticket. I know that a lot of us still hope that someday the Democratic Party will go back to its progressive roots and In the meantime, I'm just talking last hour. I don't have any problem at all in supporting Barack Obama, but I just hope that at some point the Democratic Party can once again be the Progressive Party. What made you decide to do something like this, run for Attorney General? It looked like from your bio on your website, you have a pretty good life going. Why do this?
First of all, my party had asked if I would run for Attorney General because I'm an attorney. And we wanted to run a full slate of candidates. The Progressive Party in Vermont is a major third party, or it has major party status. And we've already got six legislators sitting in Montpelier, the state capital. So we're growing, and we're a serious force in the state. So I was happy to run on the Progressive ticket, and there were several reasons I wanted to run, one being that I bring to the Attorney General's office something kind of unique. I've been an investigative journalist for 30 years and an attorney for 11. And so what I do is I combine two sets of skills. One is a real knack for investigation, getting to the bottom of a problem. And the second one, the legal one, is how you can use the law to bring justice to wrongdoers. So put the two together. And I think that I really do a great job in Vermont. I'm calling myself the people's attorney because I really care about average people and what they go through, and they don't often have advocates for them. I think that the incumbent right now, who is a Democrat, has shown in his record sort of a go-along-to-get-along attitude. I mean, the Republicans have never run a serious candidate against him, which tells you something about how he does his job. I would be very different. One of my big issues is closing down Vermont Yankee, an aging nuclear plant. But the question of the prosecution of George Bush for murder first came to my attention about 2 weeks after I'd already decided I'd run, and a friend put the book into my hands, Vincent Bugliosi's book with that title. And I was instantly intrigued because it combines terrific investigative work in journalism and with a legal framework for actually doing something about this dreadfully lawless administration that we've had for that last 8 years. So it's sort of like a how-to, a roadmap on top of being an airtight argument for how Bush misled us into this war, how he had sent soldiers abroad false pretenses. So when I read the section in the book that said any attorney general or any state's attorney can prosecute Bush in any of the states, that's when my heart froze for a moment, because it suddenly dawned on me that while I am not a sitting attorney general or district attorney, I might actually be in a better position to run for attorney general and make this an issue. I'm not going to lose my job, and I have a feeling that probably there are probably plenty of prosecutors out there that agree with Vince Bugliosi's argument but don't dare, you know, take that extra step. And so it was partly that. It was partly me being a Vermonter, and it instantly occurred to me what better state than Vermont to do this in, because Vermont has a very real animus against Bush. I mean, they can't stand him. And I suppose part of it is that Vermonters are fiercely independent, and they love their democracy. And, you know, Bush has been the very opposite of Democratic. We've had 36 towns vote to impeach Bush in our town meeting. And in the southern part of state, in Brattleboro, the city council passed a resolution that put Bush on notice that if he stepped foot in Vermont, he'd be arrested. It didn't actually have legal teeth to it, but it certainly sent a strong message.
It did. I remember when that story crossed the wires or whatever.
Yeah.
I remember talking about that. How about Bernie Sanders? Does he endorse your candidacy?
Oh, Bernie Sanders is actually very cautious, especially when there are people of similar progressive bent. He's not going to take a chance unless he's like absolutely 100% certain that, you know, either you're going to win or you have like a huge following. I mean, that's just the way Bernie is, and we've all come to accept it. I mean, he's still great at what he does, and probably he's one of the best that's sitting in Washington right now. He's the only independent. Let's see, is he the only independent still in the Senate? I'm trying to remember.
Well, Lieberman claims to be.
Oh, yeah, right. Exactly, yeah.
But that's only so he can get reelected, right?
No, Bernie's very careful about his image. Right. I mean, I know Bernie. He's a friend, and I mean, to a certain degree, certainly a political friend, but I didn't even go and ask him for an endorsement.
Well, what about the current Attorney General, the Democrat? Why is he aware of what Bulio has written? Who knows if the guy has read the book? But
well, yeah, it's very interesting. I've challenged him directly on that because we know that Bugliosi sent a copy of the book to every attorney general, so he had to have received a copy of the book. The second thing is that all my legal arguments for why Vermont has jurisdiction to do this prosecution are up on my website. So I challenged him in a debate. And I effectively said, hey, you know, you're ducking the issue here. In fact, Vince was just recently up here visiting and campaigning with me for a week. And we had a press conference where we challenged him to come out behind his closed doors. Mm-hmm. And we challenged him on the issue of jurisdiction because all he's been doing is just saying that there isn't. You can't do it in Vermont. You need dead bodies in Vermont. And Bush hasn't even been to Vermont. And, you know, he effectively said, yeah, you just got a good political soundbite there, but there's no essence, there's no substance to it. You're just throwing issues to the wind. He even accused me of violating my ethical standards as a lawyer by doing this. He said, you know, I guess he was insinuating that a real lawyer should, quote unquote, seek justice, which to me is astonishing that he would say that. He surely underestimates me, and I think he surely does a disservice to all the Vermonters who care so deeply about bringing justice on this issue and accountability. So his reactions have been very, very interesting, rather sad. And
but not certainly not interested in pursuing this. Charlotte, we're coming up on a break. Can you hold on a second? All right.
Yeah.
Let me put you on hold. We'll come back in a second. I want to find out from you if there is, you know, how it looks so far. We're very close to Election Day. I assume this election is going to be Tuesday coming. I want to see how you're doing, if you've done any polling or what have you. Stick around. We're talking to Charlotte Dennett, the Progressive Party candidate for Attorney General in Vermont. Go to her website. Take a look. Charlotte Dennett, D-E-N-N-E-T-T, for attorneygeneral.com. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Mike Malloy Show, because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
Still, 21 past the hour, we're talking with Charlotte Dennett, who is running for Attorney General on the Progressive Party ticket of Vermont. She also has made a decision to pursue George W. Bush for murder on murder charges if elected because of his illegal war in Iraq and the fact that he has sent several thousand Americans, let's not even think about the Iraqis, to their deaths. On her website, It says, because I don't want to give the impression that this is her only issue. She has, as the state's top consumer advocate, I will vigorously investigate inflated prescription drug pricing, credit card ripoffs, predatory bank lending, gas price gouging, and other forms of consumer fraud. I strongly believe that wrongdoers must be held accountable for their acts. I will also encourage the legislature to enact a temporary moratorium on home foreclosures if predatory lending was involved. That has got to resonate, Charlotte, with the voters in Vermont.
For sure. I mean, but Vermonters are suffering just the way people are across the country, and home foreclosures are up. I believe I was in New Jersey when I heard that they were trying to work out a solution so that homeowners could try to work with their lenders and forestall the foreclosure experience, which is so incredibly painful. So I would look for every way to help consumers as they struggle during these very frightening times.
Well, that issue and insistence on going after the this aging what is it, Yankee nuclear power?
Yes, Vermont Yankee it's called.
Vermont Yankee.
Mm-hmm.
If that has a Three Mile Island moment or a Chernobyl moment, there's no telling. It's incalculable what the result of that would be. And yes. isn't that one of the oldest? I think Hanford in Washington State is the oldest, but isn't Yankee, Vermont, one of the oldest nuclear plants?
It is, and it's therefore embrittled. And the fascinating thing is that in the last year and a half, one thing after another started going wrong. And there are people who have been engineers who predicted this would happen. Why? Because it was bought up by a giant outside corporation, Entergy, who has since been really running it into the ground. They increased the power level in the plant by 20%. And so there were people predicting back in 2006 that when you do this, number one, you're going to increase the radiation level outside the fence line of the plant, and number two, that it's just going to start problems because the plant is old. And lo and behold, these predictions have been coming true. I would imagine that it's been a public relations nightmare for Entergy, because the first big event that happened was a collapsed cooling tower. And I mean, the photograph of the water just gushing through this rickety wooden structure on the front page of all the newspapers, even though that in and of itself is not supposed to be dangerous. Ever since then, the Entergy has had to put out one fire after another. I mean, not literally, but there have been increased radiation levels to the point where workers have had to be evacuated. And so the astonishing thing about Vermont Yankee is that the top officials, whether they're health officials or the attorney general, for instance, they're not talking about the elephant in the room, which is that low-level radiation causes cancer. Now, come on, let's talk about it, folks. Let's not just sweep it under the rug.
You know, Charlotte, this is one of the reasons. I've been a lifelong Democrat. This is one of the reasons it gets harder and harder and harder for me to maintain loyalty to the Democratic Party, because you have a perfect example with a Democratic Attorney General in Vermont who's been there since God was a teenager, I understand, who could do something about this.
Yes.
And yet the silence is deafening. This is the stuff that drives me insane. If the Progressive Party nationwide could become the new Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party could just go ahead and become the new Republican Party, because the Republican Party is just about ready to commit suicide. And most of the Democratic Party is kind of DLC Democrats anyway. They're Republican light. I got a couple of emails from people who listen to the program in Vermont, probably online or Sirius or XM or whatever, and they strongly recommended that I get you on the program. That's the reason we got in touch with you. And we're going to have Vince on right after the next break here that's coming up. But I just want to say thanks for taking time to chat with us for a while.
Well, thank you.
And the election is, I mean, it's Tuesday night, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Same as everybody else.
How, very quickly, we have 10 seconds. How's the polling look?
Well, we haven't done any formal polling because the Attorney General race just usually doesn't do it, and we certainly don't have the money for it. But we've done informal polling, and I can tell you that the support is enormous for us. I mean, I've only received, in a month of being very public about this, I may have received 5 attacks, floods of emails supporting me.
That's great. Listen, I hope we hear from you. I'm going to be watching the returns election. I hope we hear from you. Charlotte Dennett for attorneygeneral.com. Go to her website. Charlotte, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
All right.
And
bye-bye.
Best of luck.
We want our country back. We're going to get it. Want to show him the door. Chemicals and nukes, you know, they never did appear. Yellow, orange, and red, just to keep us in fear. Said, hey, yeah, president has got to go.
He's in the jailhouse now.
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 Truth, justice, and the American way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Yeah, truth and justice in the American way. Go to Charlotte's website. Check it out. Joining us now is Vince Bugliosi, as promised. Hi, Vince.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
How's the book coming? We just talked with Charlotte Dennett.
Yeah, I heard that. Well, as you know, the book was a New York Times bestseller, not because of the mainstream media, which blacked me out, but because of people like you, Mike, and I want to thank you so much for the tremendous support you've given me, and now Charlotte Dennett and me.
And you know who else? I got to mention his name, Bob Alexander, who...
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Who set up a website, collected money, bought books, and started sending them to attorneys general with your help, of course. So Charlotte seems just damn bound and determined to follow through on this if she is elected.
Yeah, well, I think you could tell, Mike, she's intelligent, level-headed, and very importantly, and perhaps most importantly, courageous. Everyone has stayed away from this whole proposition, just frightened stiff of it, but she's got the courage to step up to the plate and take on the powers that be and take on George Bush. She announced at a press conference with me on September the 18th that based on my book, which she had read thoroughly, if she becomes the next attorney general, she will appoint me special prosecutor to seek an indictment for George Bush for murder. So if she wins, at some point after she's sworn in on January 20th, 2009, at some point thereafter, it could be as late as a half a year thereafter, I will take this case to a special grand jury in Vermont, and it's almost automatic that I will get an indictment for murder, as well as conspiracy to commit murder against Bush, Cheney, Rice, and maybe several more people. So this is a very tangible, real thing here. It's not theoretical at all. I will say this, in all candor, this case possibly might not proceed beyond the indictment. I want to be candid about this. In a typical indictment, after the indictment, the defense makes a motion to quash, and 95 times out of 100, Mike, the judge denies the motion, and the case proceeds to trial. So you go from indictment to trial. In this case, I'm very confident it'll shoot up to the U.S. Supreme Court. The court will take the case under advisement for several months. The opinion they ultimately issue may be the longest opinion in the history of the court. We already have two justices against us. You know who they are, Scalia and Thomas. The dean of the Massachusetts School of Law, Lawrence Belville, has read the book, given a tremendous blurb for the book. But he told me, he said, Vince, I don't think, if you get an indictment, I don't think the U.S. Supreme Court is going to intervene in Vermont. And I said, why, Dean? He said, I don't think they're going to have the guts to do it. I said, look what they did in 2000 in Florida. He said, yeah, but I don't think they're going to have the guts to do it this time, particularly since they got so much opposition to what they did back in 2000. And I said, well, Dean, I respect you very much, but I do think this case is going to shoot up the U.S. Supreme Court. So we don't know what's going to happen there. They could come up with some cockamamie theory, like the Equal Protection Clause in 2000 to hand the election to Bush, some ridiculous theory to prevent this case from going forward. I've done my homework. I've set forth all the possible legal arguments, and I've knocked them down, but who knows if they're going to come up with something.
But they can't
stop the indictment. They cannot stop the indictment.
All right. How would it get to the Supreme Court? I'm not clear on that.
Well, how would it get to the Supreme Court is that they would make a motion to quash, and if that motion was set aside by the court, they would appeal. They would appeal, and at some level, someone would grant it, and if they granted it, then we would take the case up to the U.S. Supreme Court. So either the prosecution or the defense will take this case up to the U.S. Supreme Court, but the first ones that will make the effort, of course, will be the defense. And if the judge denies their motion, obviously they will appeal.
But I could see where the Supreme Court would choose not to hear it. They might come back and say, well, this is not a constitutional issue. How is it a constitutional issue?
Well, they would raise constitutional issues in their motion to quash. They would say that the president, for instance, has the war power to do whatever he pleases. Now, he doesn't have the war power to do whatever he pleases because that would be a dictator's power.
Mm-hmm.
And I've researched that entire issue, and the war power exception does not apply to a situation where someone deliberately does something that is criminal. In fact, in 1952, President Truman didn't do anything at all that even smacked of criminality. It was in the middle of the Korean War. There was about to be a strike, and a steel strike.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his Secretary of Commerce seize the steel mills to continue operating them because it would be deleterious, of course, to the conduct of the war. The U.S. Supreme Court said, no, you have a war power, but it does not extend to seizing the steel mills of America. Now, a fortiori, a legal term meaning all the more so, they're not going to hold that a president has the war power to take this nation to war under false pretense. I think the main issue at the trial, if this case ever goes to trial, is whether or not Bush took this nation to war in self-defense, the so-called preemptive strike. Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, was an imminent threat to security of this country, so we had a strike first in self-defense. But if I or any other prosecutor could prove that Bush did not take this nation to war in self-defense, but under false pretenses, then, Mike, all of the killings of American soldiers in Iraq would become unlawful killings and therefore murder. I want to add this because I think it's very important. The European press has taken notice of Charlotte Dennis race up there.
Mm-hmm.
ARD, German National Television, was at my home about 3 weeks ago in Los Angeles to interview me, and then they flew back east to interview Charlotte. Der Spiegel, the biggest magazine, it's out of Germany, in Europe. They're doing a huge story on this race in a day or two. Russian television, Russia Today out of Moscow, was at my home interviewing me on it. Last week I was campaigning with Charlotte up and down the state, and when I spoke Friday night with her at the library in Burlington, the Toronto Globe was there. And they interviewed Charlotte and me earlier in the day. Al Jazeera apparently wants to interview me. So what I'm saying is that the European press realizes that if George Bush, if Charlotte Dennett wins, George Bush is going to be indicted for murder. And yet the American media, the mainstream American media, continues to black out not just my book, but this race up in Vermont. However, the Republican National Committee showed their concern after the September 18th press conference by taking a shot at Charlotte. Saying that what she's doing, they didn't mention my name, but what she's doing would only appeal to the fringe elements. Of course, in 2005, a CBS New York Times poll showed that the majority of Americans believed that Bush had, quote, intentionally misled, unquote, America into war.
Mm-hmm.
So Charlotte responded, are you suggesting that the majority of Americans are the fringe element in America? But this is something that's very real. It could happen. But I'm discovering a phenomenon out there, Mike, that I want to toss off you. I'm discovering that a great number of people out there think that it's sufficient punishment for what George Bush did to just call him, you know, nasty names.
Right.
But when it comes to taking the next step, bringing Bush to justice, they have no stomach for this at all. And this is why I would pose this question to your audience tonight, Mike. During the past 8 years, you've probably cursed Bush, you know, a great number of times. You've
mm-hmm.
probably called him a criminal, a murderer, for taking this country to war on a lie. He should
be
impeached, prosecuted as a war criminal, etc. And you have to ask yourself this. Am I a part of that group that feels that this is enough, that it's sufficient punishment for him, that we're satisfied just calling him bad names.
Mm-hmm.
But if you feel that this nation has to do something about it, that Bush has to pay for his monumental crime, and that he should be prosecuted for murder for taking this nation to war under false pretenses, then the message that I want to convey to your audience, if you're in the latter group that you want to do something about it, the only game in town right now, there's only one game in town, and that's Charlotte Dennett up in Vermont. And she needs money to convey the message that she will take George Bush to trial. There was a Brattleboro poll, Brattleboro, Vermont, a couple weeks ago, an unscientific poll that by 4-1, the people of Vermont were in favor of any candidate in Vermont, any candidate for attorney general that would bring George Bush to justice, that would prosecute him. Now, they were not mentioned. Charlotte's name was not mentioned. Sorrell's name was not mentioned. He's the incumbent.
Right.
But what we have to do is convey to the people of Vermont that there's a lady out there, Charlotte Dennett, and we have to connect her name with the sentiment that's already out there that she's willing to prosecute George Bush for first-degree murder.
Yeah, I hope that happens. And the case that you have laid out, the case that is there for any attorney general to examine and proceed with, is in addition, I guess, in my mind, to Bush's violation of the rules or the conclusions that were drawn by the Nuremberg trials in 46 and 47, the convictions that were gotten based on the crimes committed, Bush has violated international law. He's violated the laws laid out primarily by the Americans and the Brits at Nuremberg. How does this guy continue to get away with it? Rhetorical question. That's all.
I can summarize it in a couple words, but to convince you, I'd have to elaborate on it. But it's the fear in America, I think, of the right wing of the Republican Party. People yield to fear. They cater to those who are the source of the fear. Let me ask you this.
Hey, hold that question right there, Vince. I got a break here. We'll come right back. We're talking to Vince Bugliosi, author of the case against what is it, Kathy? Open your mic. The prosecution of George W. Bush for murder. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
10 before the hour, after talking with Charlotte Dennett, who is running for Attorney General on the Progressive Party ticket in Vermont and who has promised to pursue George W. Bush on a murder charge as a result of reading Vince Bugliosi's book and having conversations with Vince. We're now talking with Vince Bugliosi, the author of that book. All right, you were going to lay out a rhetorical?
Yeah, rhetorical question. Before I do that, I would be remiss if I don't get into this whole issue of helping Charlotte up in Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a computer, but I understand that on the computer, if you want to send money quickly, it's called PayPal, PayPal.
Yeah, we're all real familiar with
it. You all know that. Okay, so if a check were sent in, it takes a couple days, you know, to process and the mail and all that stuff. But she needs help. The other website for her is charchardennett.org.
Right.
And on both of those ones, charchardennett.org and charlottedennettforattorneygeneral.com, if you want to go beyond contributing money, there are instructions there on how to help her in Vermont, such as being a part of a phone bank. So she needs all the help that she can get up there. The rhetorical question I was going to ask is to prove my point or my belief without knowing that all of this is traceable to to the right wing, all of this fear. What do you think, Mike, would happen if Clinton had done exactly what George Bush has done over the past 8 years, including taking this nation to war under false pretenses? I think the answer is that the death penalty would be too good for him. They would have skinned him alive. And yet Bush takes the nation to war under false pretenses. And right now, as I am talking to you, Mike, there's well over 100,000. The number may be in excess of 1 million. Precious human beings in their cold graves right now as I'm talking to you because of George Bush. And no one up to this point has done anything at all to George Bush. No impeachment, not even an investigation of him by Congress or the Department of Justice. Nothing. So that's why we have to get serious about this. And I can tell you this. Let's hope and pray that Charlotte Dennett wins on November the 4th. If she does not, it may sound presumptuous of me, and I may not succeed, but I'm not going to be satisfied until I see this guy seated in an American courtroom being prosecuted for first-degree murder. And if he happens to be in a death penalty state, if he's convicted, Vermont is not a death penalty state. It'll be up to the jury to determine the appropriate punishment, one of their options being the imposition of the death penalty. I told the House Judiciary Committee on July 25th back in Washington, D.C., that at this stage of my career, I didn't have time for fanciful reveries, and I never in a million years would propose a prosecution against Bush for murder if I didn't think there was more than enough evidence to convict him, and I was standing on strong legal ground. So the indictment is almost automatic, and I would say there's a good chance this case will proceed to trial, although I'm not overly confident about it. If it goes to trial, I've had 21 consecutive murder convictions, Mike, and I feel very confident that Bush will not be my first loss. That's not going to happen.
Well, I think the if not a majority of people, of a huge plurality of people in this country would like to see George W. Bush prosecuted. The people who are aware of the circumstances of this this hideous attack against this third world country, Iraq, I think fall into that group. I know a lot of people, like you mentioned, people in positions of political power or legal power are terrified to do something. But
right.
If it comes to pass, Vince, I think you're the man to do it. And I hope Charlotte wins her election tomorrow or on Tuesday, and then we'll see what happens. All right.
Oh, I appreciate that very much.
All right, Vince. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in again. Stay in touch. All
Mike, thanks a million. You've been tremendously supportive. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care, Vince. Appreciate your call. Appreciate your book. Appreciate what you're doing with Charlotte. I would love to see him in a courtroom again. Good Lord have mercy. Wouldn't you love to see Vince Bugliosi prosecuting Bush and Bush with, I don't know, I'm sure he would get high-powered D.C. attorneys to represent him. William Bennett's brother, Bill Bennett's brother, what's his name? He's the one that defended Clinton when Clinton was being impeached. I'm sure Bush would get him. Who else? The guy that defended Oliver North? It would be an O.J. Simpson moment, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be all over television? And everything would come to a stop in this country. And those of us who are looking for justice would have a chance to see justice either served or butchered. All right, coming up next hour, the game played by the Republicans is full blast this year because they know what's in the offing for them. There are more attempts at voter suppression, fraudulent attempts to keep people away from the polls, Democrats away from the polls. Have you noticed that all this stuff that's hitting the media reports now, and thank God at least the media are bringing it up, whereas in the past, they just kind of like, oh, really? Somebody said you can Democrats vote on Wednesday and the Republicans vote on Tuesday. Really, isn't that funny? At least this time, they're taking this a little bit more seriously. But is it not interesting or typical or expected that all of the complaints of attempts to suppress voting in this country are leveled against Republicans? These filthy sons of bitches, these Republicans, who stand there every election cycle and lie through their teeth. Well, we're going to get up there and stop the queers from marrying. Well, we're going to get up there and bring an end to Roe v. Wade. Well, we're going to go up there and lower your taxes. Well, we're going to go up there and balance the budget. Every single thing they say is a lie, and they know it. And the American public should know it at this point. I there's always the willfully ignorant and the brain dead who refuse to see what's going on, I guess. But all of these reports, all of these actions are attempts to suppress voting, not to increase, not to just open it up and say, let's go. Yeah, goddammit, let's vote. Come on, everybody. This is the basic, elemental, essential aspect of being an American, the right to go vote. And Republicans are trying to stop it. We'll talk about that and a few other things. Stay with me. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. I was just looking at a video that Suzanne sent me that's being put out by The Call, an extreme right-wing religious group in California. A huge effort out there. For those of us who don't live in California, we're not completely tuned in as to Proposition 4 and Proposition 8, both of which deserve a no vote. Proposition 8 would alter the Constitution, is that it? The California Constitution? I'm not sure. But it would prohibit, for once and for all, legal unions, in other words, marriages between same-sex couples. And the religious right has really pulled out the stops on this. The Mormons, the evangelical crazy people, the ones that wave their arms in the air and froth at the mouth. I just watched this thing. And it's shocking. You know, y'all think that I'm kidding when I get into my rants and you know, some of my craziness about the religious right. You know, snake handlers and, you know, the talking snake theory of creation, all this other garbage that they get into. And I know sometimes I really take it out to the edge there, where a lot of people who are in mainstream religions who aren't involved in all this, who believe in their redemption, believe in afterlife and so on and so forth, find what I do in this program just monumentally offensive. And I do apologize for that offense to people who have a personal, private belief in a supreme being and all the stuff that goes with that, redemption, salvation, forgiveness, eternal life, on and on and on. That's a matter of personal choice. The mockery and the rage that comes from me against the fundamentalists is simply that I think they are crazy. I really do. And they have just a way out of proportion effect on otherwise sane, maybe, people. And that's what really pushes me to the edge. This gibbering insanity that fundamentalists, whether and I don't care what branch of what religion they're in. They're all essentially the same: Hindus, Muslims, Christians, Mormons. They're just nutballs, as far as I'm concerned. You know, how do you deny Or how do you state categorically and refuse to accept any counter-argument, how do you expect people to believe that the Earth and everything in the universe is 6,000 years old? I mean, it's insanity. It's the kind of craziness. But I digress. So these religious fundamentalist freaks are doing everything they can. This Armageddonous, the nation is going to go down the crapper. Marriage is an institution between one man and one telephone pole, or one woman, will end forever if gay folk have the right, or same-sex couples have the right to get married. I mean, what what kind of madness is that? Nobody's asking these creepy sons of bitches to sanction marriage in their creepy sons of bitchin' churches. Nobody's asking that. Nobody's saying, well, if you're a Baptist or a Methodist or a Mormon or an Episcopalian or a whirling dervish, that you have to perform these ceremonies inside your sanctuaries. Nobody's saying that. Nobody. What the issue is a state sanction, which is the way all marriages are state sanctioned. They have to be, or they're not legal. That's all. Legal. You understand that word, legal? And Prop 8 is about preventing a legal process guaranteed by the Constitution, equal protection under the law. It is so simple. But religious fundamentalists of any stripe devour, use as bathroom tissue, whatever Constitution might be lying around. They have no respect for it because it's man-made, you see. God's Constitution is found, I don't know where, in their Holy Writ, whatever that is. So Prop 8, for the people in California who are dealing with this, this is a human rights issue. And what the religious freaks are trying to do is to deny their fellow citizens a basic human right. That is a right to form a legal contract with someone you love and get about your life. Same-sex couples, you know, they're not trying to tell these religious people, well, you can't handle snakes in your sanctuary, or you can't pretend that when you do communion you're actually cannibalizing a corpse and drinking blood. If you want to believe that, go ahead with your blood cult. Go ahead. Gay folk, don't try to get propositions on the ballot that say there'll be no more of this communion crap. These people are practicing cannibalism and blood drinking. No, they don't. They figure, oh, what the hell? Transubstantiation, if the Catholics want to believe that, go ahead. Go ahead. If the Mormons want to believe that Joseph Smith was taking a hike in the woods in Vermont and the angel Moroni or Gobi or whoever the hell it was appeared and said, look over there under the trees. Okay, go ahead. You know, gays aren't invading the churches saying, you got to stop this. You're poisoning the minds of our youth. Same-sex couples just want to have the same rights as creepy Mormons and freaked out dominionist Christians and dancing Hindus. You know, just the same, that's all. Just leave us alone. If we want to take advantage of contract law, which is what marriage is, you dumbasses, I'm referring to the religious geeks, contract law. I want to form a contract with this person. And she's a woman. And I'm a man. Oh, okay, go ahead. I want to form a contract with this person, and he's a man, and I'm a man. Oh, no! God damn no! You're going to burn in hell, and you're going to drag us all into the fiery pit. This is insanity, people. It is craziness. It is absolute insanity. You watch this video, and you're going to have to find it yourself, The Call. Go find it. You can find it on YouTube. Watch it. These are not sane people. And why should people who are sane, you know, people say, hey, I want to form a contract with this person so that we can be married and we can enjoy the rights and privileges and the obligations of a married couple. And then you have these insane people jumping up and down and waving crucifixes and holy water and bat guano and whatever the hell they wave these days at people who just want to live legally. And saying, no, no, the gates of hell will open, demons will slither out, snakes and spiders. It's insanity. Now, what's going to happen to Prop 8? Proposition 8 in California. No telling. No telling. A lot of progressives in California. Also, a lot of fruits and nuts, too. You know, the real fringe-like blah, 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 types. No telling. But that's my little spiel on Prop 8 to anyone who gives a damn. But I honestly shudder whenever my fellow citizens vote to deny other fellow citizens basic human rights, whether it's voting, whether it's, in just recently in the 60s, it was still illegal for people of different races to marry in Virginia. I mean, this is crazy. It's crazy. Leave the goddamn gay people alone, you nuts!
Theater tonight, get them up against the wall. Now there's one in the spotlight, he don't look right to me. Get him up against the wall. And that one looks Jewish.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. The voter suppression efforts by the Republicans are just going full blast. Here in Georgia, the requirement to have a photo ID has been upheld by the courts. A lot of the voterless purging happens this way. They send a notice to your home. If it's not returned in 20 days, then you are purged from the list. It doesn't make any difference if you're a citizen, if you show up with your proper identification. This Help America Vote Act, or Hinder America from Voting Act, was a Republican wet dream, because Republicans cannot win. They cannot win ever in any kind of election anywhere in the United States at all unless they cheat, unless somehow they figure out a way to steal the election. This is the nature of Republicans. They are liars, cowards, sneaks, and cheats, in addition to being thieves. It's getting really bad here in Georgia, and I'll tell you, the early voting thing that's been going on here. So far in Georgia, at least 1 million people have voted. That in a state, how many people live here? 8 million, Kathy? 15%, 16% of the voters have already voted. This is true in so many states. We tried again today for early voting. And today, again, we couldn't do it because, you know, we have to pick Molly up from preschool. We go and take a look at the line. Holy Jesus, it just goes forever. These are not people showing up to vote for the old pimp and the hoe from Wasilla. These are people lining up to vote Democratic. And every effort is being made to suppress the vote by Republicans. It's never Democrats. Democrats go out of their way to register people to vote. Republicans will do any stinking, filthy trick they can think of because they are cowards, because they are liars, because they are sneaks, to suppress voting. Suppress it. Like this phony flyer in Virginia that says, The Democrats vote on November 5th and Republicans vote on November 4th. Who puts that out? Who, Mike? Republicans. And, of course, there's misspellings all through this thing. It looks official when you stand 10 feet away. But when you read it, the dumbass who wrote this or the group of dumbasses, Republicans, can't spell. This is so typical. Oh, it would be a great day, wouldn't it, if Republicans were just eliminated. The stench in this country would end. The slime would disappear. The air would be breathable. Joy would reign. Peace would flow from border to border if every single right-winger and every single Republican would just goddamn go ahead and rapture. Get out of my country, you scum! Ah. Oh. Only in Limbaugh and some of these people's case, it'd be reverse rapture. They go straight to hell. Boom! Right down through the earth. Boom! Right into that old lake of fire. Lake of fire! The other night, I read something from somebody who wrote about if the election is stolen, there's going to be hell. This is from Till in Austin, Texas. Mike, presuming the gopher broke and announced a late-night surprise victory for the Mad Pig and McCain. Why present ourselves en masse out in the wide open to protest the theft of yet another election? We know they have regular army stationed here with all kinds of new torture toys and who knows how many special police units and private mercenaries. Instead of going to the streets to be gassed, shocked, shot, and arrested, why not stage a nationwide strike? Has there ever been a better or more pressing reason? A few thousand heavily armed riot troops can control a crowd of 50,000 angry pacifists. Haven't we learned anything from our history? We can reverse the advantage if they have to come to us. By slowing down the blitz, we buy time for the word to get around and the reality to sink in. Maybe, just maybe, we can unite if enough people realize it can happen here. Reverse the shock and awe back on them. Let the U.S. rewrite the rules for a change. Let us rewrite the rules for a change. If they actually go through with this, martial law is probably in the plans anyway. Let us at least deprive them of the initial mass arrests and cause a little confusion among them. Won't the rest of the world think better of us if we respond proactively and creatively? Isn't that what we hope of Obama? Let's show him what we expect. P.S. It might be a good idea to stock up on a few days' supplies, but without causing a panic. That certainly makes sense. It does. As a first tactic, as a first response to a theft, there needs to be a general strike in this country. I mean, a real general strike, where people just don't go anywhere. It's easy for me to say because we work from the Molloy compound here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, but I'll guarantee you, I will be on the air, and this network will be on the air. If this election is stolen, I agree with what the emailer said. General strike, massive, do nothing. Do the Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Jesus Christ route. Skies are sunny.
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Molloy.
Last email and then to your phone calls. This is from Mike who writes, my view on the Obama half hour tonight. It was logical, rational, reason, dealt with common human concerns and sympathetic. Compared to McCain, who has always been irrational with speeches that have been a scrambled collage of crazy, half-baked ideas, almost totally lacking in any rationality. His speeches, presumably mirroring mirroring his mind hop from one thought to another with no commonality and reason, similar to that of an Alzheimer's victim whose mind is a collection of fragmented, illogical ideas with no consistent logical connections, in whose brain the neural connections have been broken. Yeah, kind of like that. My old man died of Alzheimer's, and I hung out with him a little bit when he was really nuts, so to speak. I'm not mocking Alzheimer's. But one of the classics, this is either Alzheimer's or schizophrenia. He called my sister one night when he was in the depths of his Alzheimer's / schizophrenia, and he had a dog, a female dog, that kept him connected a little bit to reality. And the dog got pregnant. And the night that the dog started dropping puppies in my old man's kitchen, he called up my sister and he said, "Gene, my dog is breaking into pieces." Now, that's either classic Alzheimer's or classic schizophrenia or both. All right. To your phone calls. Russ is calling from Hollywood, Florida, listening on WINZ. Hey, Russ.
Hey, Mike. How you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. I'm the president of a firefighters union down here. Excuse me. And I wanted to thank you for your comments on the various propositions trying to abolish gay marriage, as it were, because we've got one down here called Amendment 2 that's going to be on the ballot next week.
Oh,
but what
God.
People don't realize is that that's just the foundation. And what happens next is that they use that as a as an entry level to then go ahead and take away benefits and privileges from even heterosexual couples. And in Florida, what they propose to do is define marriage as between a man and a woman and prohibit anything that is, quote, substantially the equivalent. And in my case, in my department, if a heterosexual unmarried couple registers as domestic partners, they can qualify for health insurance and other benefits.
Yeah, that's true here in Atlanta,
too. Yeah, same thing.
Right.
And people don't realize, because there's a lot of heterosexual people out there that go, "Oh, well, I'm not gay. What do I really care about this?"
Right.
But they stand to have an infringement on their own rights and privileges, because once once the camel gets its nose under the tent,
that's right.
There's no stopping it. And the Florida professional firefighters have come out in opposition to this because they know it's going to hurt working people and hurt firefighters and police officers and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to kind of add to your comments, and again, thank you for bringing the issue to people's attention. And I hope everybody in Florida comes out and votes against Amendment 2 on Tuesday.
All right, Russ, thanks. You put it a lot more eloquently than I could. Thanks, Russ. So if you live in Florida, Amendment 2. It's just, it really is crazy, isn't it? I had to pause there for a second and remember my son Chris was a firefighter and an EMT, fireman. What's the proper term these days, Kathy? Firefighter? An EMT, and then he's now back in school at a university here in the South, studying for his nursing degree. His wife is at the same university studying for her law degree. And I'll never forget when Chris, this was about 4 years ago, wasn't it, Kathy? When Chris called and he had just come back from, he called me from the firehouse, from the fire station. And he was very subdued, you know, my 6'3". 180-pound son. He was very subdued, and he said, "Dad." I said, "Yeah." And he said, "I just came back from a call." "Yeah. I just saw my first dead body." Remember that, Kathy? And he was. I'm not laughing, other than the fact that Chris finally, confronted what a lot of people in law enforcement and firefighting and emergency medical services, what they eventually come across. And And I said, "Well, you want to tell me about it?" And he did. And it was it was really a shock for Chris to come across his first dead body. So anyway, it just when somebody calls this program who is a firefighter, it just reminds me of Chris when he was in that particular profession. He wanted to go on to become a smoke jumper, and I said, please, 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 no. like any parent would, I'm sure, but he was determined. This was a kid who wanted to join the Navy too, until I've told the story before. My former brother-in-law, who was a naval officer, talked him out of it. No, Chris, don't do that. I digress. Back to your phone calls. I'm sorry, I just start tripping, right? It just happens. George is calling from Las Vegas. George, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
You know, one thing I wanted to say is that you are spot on everything that you talk about.
Wow.
Honestly. I mean, I am so impressed with your analysis of the world, whatever. and I have people that I have been emailing that when you were taken off the air in some places, they told me that they were really pissed off because you were and everything. One woman was a woman named Tabra, who's now in Bali. She was one of your biggest fans. And one thing I want to say is that you are spot on everything. You know what the power elite are doing, and you are the one who is exposing all of this crap that they're doing to us now. I mean, with the bailout, with everything else. And I just want to say I'm so proud of you for saying it all.
Well, that's very kind. But remember, the only difference between me and you is the fact that I have a microphone. Nothing I say on this program, George, is anything that a normal progressive or liberal or whatever Democrat doesn't think constantly.
Right, you're exactly right. You know, so, and I am so PO'd at the fact that the mainstream media just mimics or just says whatever these idiots say, and I am so angry, and I'm so relieved that you are there saying what you say, and quite honestly, I'm so proud that you're still have a voice.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it, George. That's all. I appreciate what you had to say. Thank you. Joan is calling from Yonkers, New York, listening on the internet. Hey, Joan. Ouch.
Hi. How are you?
I'm okay. How are
you? I am fine, thanks. I just have a suggestion, and I hope that you will follow up. You might have already read it, because I know you read so much. The November 3rd New Yorker.
Oh, about the pregnant evangelical teenagers?
What do you think about that?
Well, I haven't read it. Somebody, you're about the fifth person who's either emailed me or I printed it off during the program tonight. And when the show's over here and I go get in bed, I'm going to take this with me and read it.
You're going to like it. And by the way, I loved your, what you call ranting and raving sometimes about Jesus, they hate Jesus, and the Marxist socialists who don't pay attention to Luke, right?
Yeah.
That is something. I went and read Acts again.
Yeah, there it is. There it is.
There it is.
There it is.
In all of its wonderful glory.
You know, there it is. You show me one of these evangelicals of the Sarah Palin stripe who will acknowledge that Jesus was a socialist, I'll show you somebody who has been excommunicated. Hey, did you see that movie Lost in Yonkers?
Yes.
That was one of my favorite movies.
Oh, I thought it was wonderful.
It was great. I loved that movie.
I loved it, too. And Yonkers has been responsible for quite a few things, like that's my favorite, Lost in Yonkers. And, of course, Hello, Dolly, and all kinds of good little things happening.
How far are you from the city, from New York City?
Very, very not far, about 30 miles.
Oh, is that
the
all?
About heart of the city.
Yeah.
Because we're north of the city, and right after the Bronx comes Yonkers, pretty much.
Well,
there we are.
Have you lived in Yonkers all your life?
No, I was born on the banks of the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
Winona, Minnesota, which unfortunately has had many floods recently.
Yeah.
But
how did you get to Yonkers?
I got to Yonkers because my mom and dad took me and my brother here, and I taught for many, many years. I'm a retired French teacher, and loved it. And I met my beloved husband here. Thank goodness he was the fiddler on the roof, and he popped out of the pit, and there he was.
I'll be damned. Well, Joan, thank you so much for calling, all right?
Well, thank you. We love your program. Wouldn't miss it. Thanks a lot.
All right, Joan, take care. Take care. That's a great movie, Lost in Yonkers. That one, and what was the one with Cher in it Moonstruck, yeah. It had nothing to do with Yonkers, but those two movies just were nice, you know? Thanks, Joan! All right, is it time for a break? I think it's time for a break. It's getting past time for a break. Kathy's searching through her musical library for what? What the hell are you looking for? That?
No, I was trying to find something Yonkers appropriate, but never mind.
We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. It's about 9 before the hour. Oh, just a program note here. Kathy insists I mention this. On Monday, the day before Election Day, I'll be on Rick Sanchez's program on CNN between 3 and 4. That ought to be fun. Email here from Bob Alexander regarding Bob's in Seattle, of course, and they just saw the Obama half-hour political ad. It was delayed for 3 hours. Bob writes, yeah, I could see technically exactly what was going on in the production, and it still tugged all existing heartstrings, all of them. That's what it was designed to do. Whoever produced it or whatever team was responsible, they pulled it off. It was 100% emotional. Nonlinear, it had all the emotional notes spot on. These guys are good. I can't remember the last time I watched a politician that I disagree with at least 50% of the time swamp all my synapses with that seductive drug of hope. Any so-called undecided voter who watched and still remains undecided is brain dead. If the Republicans manage to steal this one, they might get away with it for a day or two, and then they'll be vaporized by the real electorate. Lord, I feel like I've just come out of church and want to stand in line to get dipped. Bob Alexander. At supervenes.com. See? I told you. And it impresses me because Bob has been, he's produced a few things in the film industry, and he understands this. He knows how this stuff is done. Unlike I or you, who just sit back and have our heartstrings plucked. Thanks to the crew who are always there, no matter what happens. Ian Huff, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, and our executive producer, Kathy Bay. Have we got time to squeeze? Yeah, we do. Ray is calling from New Mexico, listening on Sirius. Hey, Ray.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. I just thought I'd share a little story of my voting experience.
All right, let's hear it.
I went out today. Well, I work nights, so it's kind of tough for me to get up in the day. I get up in the late afternoon most of the time, but I got up early today.
Yeah.
So I could go and find out whether my district is doing early voting, because I didn't know.
Right.
So I get up about 2 o'clock. I head out, and I go to the place that's listed on my voter card.
Mm-hmm.
This it's a children's recreation center, you know.
Right.
And that's what's listed on my card as the polling place.
Right.
So I go over there. Nobody's there. Nothing. No voting. No mm-hmm. booth. Excuse me. No booths.
Mm-hmm.
No people. Nothing. There's nothing there. But I did find a woman who was there. And I was like, are you guys doing voting today, or what's going on? And she told me, well, you need to go to the senior center that's around the corner there behind the supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, so I leave. I go over to what I assume is the only senior center in town. But we got a lot of older people here in town, so I should have known better. But anyway, I go in there, same story. No, you need to go down the street. So the third one was a charm, because I went down the street and
right.
there's a line of people there, all the campaign signs and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So I figured, well, that's got to be it.
Right.
So I went in, I parked. The parking lot was pretty full,
uh-huh.
and so I parked, went and got in line, and I counted, and there was probably about 60, 65 people in front of me,
right,
waiting to vote,
mm-hmm.
and so I actually ended up waiting. By the time I got to the door to go inside, it was about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So not too bad.
No, that's not too bad. On the other hand, it really, really, really sucks. You know, we've been around for 232 years, and they haven't figured out yet how to handle. I mean, why do people have to wait an hour or two or four or six?
I voted. I voted not in either of the last two elections because I wasn't registered, but my bad. But I had voted in one of the elections prior to that, and it didn't take nearly as long.
Yeah,
We just went to
somebody's house. I do believe, and Ray, thank you, man. I appreciate you checking in. I do believe this is just, another example of the attempts at voter suppression by the Republicans. Don't equip the polling places with enough machines. Be confusing about where they're located.
I heard a report, I think it was on NPR today or something, that Nevada has the best voting regulations in the world, really, in America for sure. You can vote in grocery stores, in shopping malls.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Pretty much anywhere except a brothel or a casino.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
It's electronic voting, and you can just go anywhere. And they're voting, their turnout is enormous,
right.
And no one waits.
Yeah.
Nobody ever waits.
That's the way it should be. Voting should be the most, it should be the easiest thing to do as a citizen. As far as identification, figure out some kind of identification and maybe have a 4 or 5 year grace period to work it in. Of course, this is not going to happen. But voting should be something that every American has access to as easily as possible. But of course, that's not what Republicans want, right? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Really, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.